Attention, dear listeners. It is vital that you undergo a sonic brain scan to eliminate all normal Trojan tinkering conspiracy viruses and other slack-destroying anomalies. So, sit back, relax, get yourself comfortable. Breathe deeply and relax. Brain scanning will begin in 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Ha 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 ha!
Sonic Brain Scan is complete. Welcome to my church.
Intoxication, refusing to pay your check at a speakeasy, resisting an officer, and inciting a riot. Guilty or not guilty?
See my lawyer.
Is your attorney here in court?
Right there, Your Honor, on the job.
Wait a minute, who are you?
I'm Roy Retwell, counselor at law, notary Niblick, public.
Roy Atwell?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is the defendant guilty?
Guilty? Yes. No. 1,000 miles, no. I demand a habeas corpus, a corpus. My client is as innocent as a newborn babe. This place is as clear as a crystal.
Boy, I'll tell you, Webster, that...
Order in the court, please.
Oh, no harm done, Your Honor. My client is feeding his goat. Feeling his boat, his oats. Mr. Blotto's a quince, a prince. Ale fellow and well wet. Met.
No, never mind that. Put him on the stand.
No sooner shed than done. I'll have him acquitted in 2 slakes in milkshakes of a clam's tail. Clam's tail. Mr. Motto, Blotter, will you take the stand? Your Allen, he's a slobber, a sober as a fudge. Yes.
Proceed with the case, if you will.
Exactly. Now, Mr. Blotto, we want the truth and better not the sleuth. Mr. Truth, we want the sleuth and nothing but... I object.
Wait a minute. What are you objecting for?
Well, I thought I'd take the words out of your mouth. Every time I try a case, somebody objects.
The boy, Darrell, and the boy, old Clarence.
Order, please. Now, was your client in the speakeasy on the night in question?
Of course he was in the squeakeasy. Every man has his place, and my client's place was in the pig and bristle, the whistle.
What's that?
With the pig and thistle, the pig and pickle, the whistle, that's a sneaky squeak. Oh, let it go,
Please. Had the defendant been drinking?
Mrs. Blotto, have you been drinking?
I was polluted. Here's the bill, boy. Was I drinking?
It's a list of drinks. Two Brandy Bloat, I mean Brandy Goat, Boat, and Tom and Beery, Jerry.
When did the trouble start?
The stubble start? There was no bubble startle. Someone put a mum's extra fly bottle in my client's hand, and he tossed it out of a waiter.
Atta boy, old technocrat, atta boy.
Quietly. Now he tossed the bottle.
He bossed the tuttle, yes. The bum's extra dry dottle. The waiter ducked. And the bottle went through the window.
Then the police came in.
Yes, the cops broke down the doors, but the waddle was empty, and the cops wanted to know why.
Hail, order,
please. Now continue, Mr. Atwell.
But my client was as cute as a cucumber. He threw a cop through a window.
Through the same window?
Yes, he saw a hole in the window, and he didn't want to see it go to waste.
No, I object. Have a little drink.
Here, Blotto, put that flask away.
I object. Pass it around.
Give me the flask, officer.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's nothing, Your Honor. It's ginger ale or root rear. A beer, I'll bet.
If this is intoxicating liquor, Blotto will get lucky.
Taste it, Your Honor. Why, it's probably nothing but some mouth sauce or a gargle that he's been taking for a sore soap.
It smells like liquor.
Wait,
that is a lie. Taste it, Your Honor. Taste it.
Tastes like liquor, too. You try it that way.
Yes. That's not jicker. A litter. It's a liquor. I'll say it's lemon laspe.
Here, let me taste it again. No. It's scotch.
No, give me another paste. A taste. No, that's not splotch. It's orange squash.
Well, I'll try once more. No, it's scotch.
Wait,
stop that sting, you. Yeah. I can sing better than myself.
Don't deny, Nudge. I mean, son.
Hey, well, let's make it a trio.
All right, boys, let's go.
Trio, the idea of my heart.
Can we truly call this a monster club? If we do not boast amongst our membership a single member of the human race?
Nonsense!
What can he do?
What can he do? In the past 60 years, Humes have exterminated over 150 million of their own kind. No effort has been spared to reach this astronomical figure, and the methods that they have used must demand our unstinted admiration. You know, Humes began with certain very serious disadvantages, but these they overcame with wonderful ingenuity. Not having a fang or a claw, or even a whistle worth talking about, they invented guns and tanks and bombs and aeroplanes and extermination camps and poison gas and daggers and swords and bayonets and booby traps and atomic bombs and flying missiles, submarines, warships, aircraft carriers, and motor cars. They have even perfected a process whereby they can spread a lethal disease on any part of this planet. Not to say anything about nuclear power. During their short history, you know, Humes have subjected other Humes to death by burning, hanging, decapitation, strangulation, electrocution, shooting, drowning, crushing, racking, disemboweling, and other methods far, far too revolting for the delicate stomachs of this august assembly.
I never realized he was so talented.
We don't like to boast.
I second the proposal. A member of such a talented race can only be a tribute to any monster club.
Maestro, to celebrate the installation of a new member, may we hear our song.
everybody starts to shout.
For the Drug Truth Network, it's the 420 Drug War News. Well, it's deja vu all over again and again. This from the New York Times. Medical marijuana advocate faces new U.S. indictment. A leading medical marijuana advocate who successfully appealed his federal conviction this year has been indicted on new criminal charges that include tax evasion and money laundering. The man, Ed Rosenthal, a well-known spokesman for the movement to legalize marijuana, was already facing a retrial on federal charges of growing. It accuses Mr. Rosenthal, 61, of 14 felony charges that include cultivating marijuana plants, laundering $1,850, which the government says he got from selling the plants to medical dispensaries, and tax evasion. His tax returns, prosecutors said, omitted income from the sale of the plants. Reached last week at his home in Oakland, Mr. Rosenthal said he thought the efforts to prosecute him were part of a campaign to shutter medical marijuana sites in California and to subvert the state law allowing them. Quote, "They want to shut me up. They are vindictive. They don't like anybody beating them, and they will go after you again and again until they wear you down." End quote. The state and federal government have been locked in a legal and cultural battle over the medicinal merits of marijuana since 1996, when California voters approved a ballot measure giving seriously ill patients the right to buy and use the drug with a doctor's prescription. The Drug Enforcement Agency has been aggressive in investigating medical marijuana facilities. Last week, the authorities raided and closed five Bay Area sites, arresting 15 people. A spokesman for the United States Attorney's Office, Luke McCauley, would not comment on the new indictment, but said, quote, "Drugs are a priority for the Drug Department, being that marijuana is illegal under federal law," end quote. The new charges against Mr. Rosenthal are similar to those in a 2002 federal indictment. At the time, Mr. Rosenthal worked for the city of Oakland and was sanctioned under city and state laws to grow marijuana plants and sell them to the dispensaries. He was convicted by a jury, but a federal appeals court overturned the decision, citing juror misconduct. He was granted a new trial and prosecutors were moving forward, but the new federal indictment supersedes the earlier one.
Reefer madness! Reefer madness!
And now for a quick little story from Reuters. It seems that in Afghanistan, the Canadian troops are having a hard time. They stumbled across an unexpected and potent enemy, an almost impenetrable forest of 10-feet-high marijuana plants. The challenge is that marijuana plants absorb heat and energy very readily. It's difficult to penetrate with thermal devices, and as a result, you have to be careful that the Taliban don't dodge in and out of those marijuana forests. Dean Becker, 420 Drug War News.
The blackness comes forward and stares straight in to my face. It smothers me with ugliness, and blinds my hope like mace. Then it goes away, and it's just another day, and I smile at everyone, but I have little to say. The blackness is powerful. It cannot be stopped or slowed. Futility becomes more and more evident. My will to resist does erode. And no one seems to know, and no one seems to care. And I want to tell them all, but I know I mustn't dare. Blackness is patient. For now, it can be my friend. It takes my pristine illusions, leave them tarnished, stale, and dull. Coffee break at 10, and the Broncos fuck up again. Oh, it's gone now, the magic's no more, and it's really all such a bore. The blackness is honest and as sure as the stare is home. My pristine illusions leave them tarnished, stale, and dull. I know the arguments are good and long, showing how all that I do is wrong. I want to skip them out of my mind, for I know what I will find.
We'll be right back.
blackness takes over and embeds itself deep in my soul. There's nothing left for me to do except acknowledge its complete control. And the hospital bed is flat, and I see the world from my back, and I smile at everyone. At last I finally can laugh.
Dear young man, you know as well as I do that God is dying all over the world. Man invented him but doesn't need him anymore. Man is God now. As a matter of fact, he always was. Overpopulation, pollution, famine, nuclear holocaust, war. This civilization is driving us into the sea of extinction. The keynote is control.
That's the province of politicians, not scientists.
Yes, but we're the only ones who are trying to combat the problem now. In 20 years' time, we will be in positions of power, and then we'll be ready to act for the good of humanity.
Ah, just like the Church of the Subgenius, dear friends. We got an amazing document in the mail, a copy of what supposedly is top secret material, a document called Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars, a blueprint for your eventual enslavement. And I don't want to say who sent this to us. Of course, this could, I suppose, possibly be a hoax. Oh, I can't use that tape, friends, that tape deck. I use this one up here. Did you hear that noise that came in? There's no telling what they were trying to do to us there with that one. But you know, as the preface to this thing says here, conspiracy theories are not new in history. For example, plots to kill Caesar and overthrow Rome abounded. But there are many who go out of their way to ridicule and silence those who today speak of conspiracies. Why do you think they don't want people to think about conspiracies? Seldom does hard evidence emerge that by its very content indicates it serves as a blueprint for a conspiracy. Yet the very nature and information in the top-secret Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars introductory programming manual reads like a government technical manual from some secret group of think tank planners who have put many years of research and development into creating a new science of social engineering so they can better manipulate the masses. This document was uncovered quite by accident on July 7th, 1986, when an employee of Boeing Aircraft Company purchased a surplus IBM copier for scrap parts at a sale and discovered inside details of a plan hatched in the embryonic days of the Cold War, which called for control of the masses through manipulation of industry, people's pastimes, education, and political leanings. It called for a quiet revolution pitting brother against brother and diverting the public's attention from what was really going on. And friends, here are some of the excerpts from this amazing document. Energy is recognized as the key to all activity on Earth. Natural science is the study of the sources of control of natural energy, and social science, theoretically expressed as economics, is the study of the sources and control of social energy. All science is merely a means to an end. The means is knowledge. The end is control. Beyond this remains only one issue. Who will be the beneficiary? In 1954, this was the issue of primary concern. Although the so-called moral issues were raised, in view of the law of natural selection, it was agreed that a nation or world of people who will not use their intelligence are no better than animals who do not have intelligence. Such people are beasts of burden and stakes on the table by choice and consent. Consequently, in the interest of future world order, peace, and tranquility, it was decided to privately wage a quiet war against the American public with an ultimate objective of permanently shifting the natural and social energy or wealth of the undisciplined and irresponsible many into the hands of the self-disciplined, responsible, and worthy few. In order to implement this objective, it was necessary to create, secure, and apply new weapons, which, as it turned out, were a class of weapons so subtle and sophisticated in their principle of operation and public appearance as to earn for themselves the name Silent Weapon. In conclusion, the objective of economic research as conducted by the magnates of capital, banking, and the industries of goods and services is the establishment of an economy which is totally predictable and manipulatable. In order to achieve a totally predictable economy, the lower class elements of society must be brought under total control, i.e., must be housebroken, trained, and assigned a yoke and long-term social duties from a very early age, before they have an opportunity to question the propriety of the matter. In order to achieve such conformity, the lower class family unit must be disintegrated by a process of increasing preoccupation of the parents and the establishment of government-operated daycare centers for the occupationally orphaned children. The quality of education given to the lower class must be of the poorest sort, so that the moat of ignorance isolating the inferior class from the superior class is and remains incomprehensible to the inferior class. With such an initial handicap, even bright lower class individuals will have little, if any, hope of extricating themselves from their assigned lot in life. This form of slavery is essential to maintaining some measure of social order, peace, and tranquility for the ruling class. The silent weapon shoots situations instead of bullets, propelled by data processing instead of chemical reactions, originating from bits of data instead of grains of gunpowder, from a computer instead of a gun, operated by a computer programmer instead of a marksman, and under the orders of a banking magnate instead of a military general. The public cannot comprehend this weapon, and therefore cannot believe that they are being attacked and subdued by a weapon. The public might instinctively feel that something is wrong, but because of the technical nature of the silent weapon, cannot express their feeling in a rational way or handle the problem with intelligence. Therefore, they do not know how to cry for help. Yes, and then it goes on to describe the silent weapon, dear friends, Mr. Rothschild's energy discovery, apparent capital as a paper inductor and so forth. And they use a sort of shock testing by which the prices of commodities are shocked and the public consumer reaction is monitored. The resulting echoes of the economic shock are interpreted theoretically by computers, and the psychoeconomic structure of the economy is thus discovered. It is by this process that partial differential and difference matrices that define the family household make possible its evaluation as an economic industry, or, in other words, the household as dissipated consumer structure. Then the response of the household to future shocks can be predicted and manipulated, and society becomes a real regulated animal with its reins under the control of a sophisticated computer-regulated social energy bookkeeping system. Eventually, every individual element of the structure comes under computer control through a knowledge of personal preferences. Such knowledge guaranteed by computer association of consumer preferences through the Universal Product Code, or UPC, the zebra stripe pricing codes on packages, with identified consumers, identified via association with the use of a credit card, and later a permanent tattooed body number invisible under normal ambient illumination. The document, dear friend, then goes on to describe the formula for the economic model of the silent weaponry, with various diagrams, the three industrial classes, with sort of almost electronic, when it's laid out with the E model of economic inductance, time-flow relationships, and self-destructive oscillation. And then it comes to this little situation here, and by which we find that the social welfare program is nothing more than an open-ended credit balance system, which creates a false capital industry to give non-productive people a roof over their heads and food in their stomachs. This can be useful, however, because the recipients become state property in return for the gift of social welfare. They become a standing army for the elite, for he who pays the piper picks the tune. Those who get hooked on the economic drug must go to the elite for a fix. In this, the method of introducing large amounts of stabilizing capacitance is by borrowing on the future credit of the world. This is the fourth law of motion and consists of performing an action and leaving the system before the reaction returns to the point of action, a delayed reaction, and by this means, politicians become popular in their own time, and the public pays for it later. In fact, the measure of such a politician is the delay time. The same thing is achieved by a government printing money beyond the limit of gross national product, an economic process called inflation. This puts a large quantity of money in the hands of the public and maintains a balance against their greed, creates a false self-confidence in them, and for a while stays the wolf from the door. But they must eventually resort to war to balance the account, because war ultimately is merely the act of destroying the creditor, and the politicians are the publicly hired hitmen that justify the act to keep the responsibility and blood off the public conscience. If the people really cared about their fellow man, they would control their appetite, their greed, their procreation, etc., so that they would not have to operate on a credit or welfare social system which steals from the worker to satisfy the bum. Since most of the general public will not exercise restraint, there are only two alternatives to reduce the economic inductance of the system. One, let the population bludgeon each other to death in war, which only results in the total destruction of the living earth. Or two, take control of the world by the use of economic silent weapons in a form of quiet warfare and reduce the economic inductance of the world to a safe level by a process of benevolent slavery and genocide. The latter option has been taken as the obviously better option. At this point, it should be crystal clear to the reader why absolute secrecy about the silent weapons is necessary. The general public refuses to improve its own mentality and its faith in its fellow man. It has become a herd of proliferating barbarians and, so to speak, a blight upon the face of the earth. They do not care enough about economic science to learn why they have not been able to avoid war despite religious morality and their religious or self-gratifying refusal to deal with earthly problems renders the solution of the earthly problem unreachable by them. It is left to those few who are truly willing to think and survive as the fittest to survive, to solve the problem for themselves as the few who really care. Otherwise, exposure of the silent weapon would destroy our only hope of preserving the seed of future true humanity. And see, dear friends, I have gone and just exposed the secret of the silent weapon over the radio, destroying their hope of preserving the seed of future true humanity. But since when, my friend, did we need to preserve full-blooded humanity? Why, the full-blood human has not a drop of Yeti blood in it, and I don't see any point in us mollycoddling those people. And as far as I'm concerned, you should respond to this the secrets revealed in this document, obviously written by the higher-ups in the conspiracy itself, by contributing to your voice of the Church of the Subgenius in your area, dear friend. Because we love you and want to save you from that evil, evil conspiracy.
For the Drug Truth Network, it's the 420 Drug War News.
This is Terry Nelson speaking on behalf of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. To a teenager, the words do not, you cannot, and I forbid often cause the opposite behavior from the original intent. As if presented with a dare by the adult society, juveniles are curious, eager to find out for themselves. Fueled by a culture of virtual reality, extreme experiences, and instant gratification, teens feel compelled to try for themselves. Resulting dangers and punishments do not factor into the decision process. For teens, drug and alcohol top the list. Both are illegal and easy to acquire. As adults, we all know that everyone makes mistakes. As a parent, we must let them make mistakes while trying to protect them so that they can make a good choice instead of bad choices later in life when penalties are more severe. Not so easy for a parent to do in a society that prefers to punish instead of educate. The government's response has been to criminalize certain teen behavior and deal with it by punitive and criminal punishments. The results are 1.9 million juveniles have been arrested for drug possession in the past 10 years. If one of these kids was yours, then you personally know the pain associated with the event. This does not have to go on, and other parents do not have to feel this pain. Lectures don't work, and after-the-fact lectures fall on deaf ears. In the criminal justice system, even if the juvenile offender is lucky enough to be given community service, he or she is lumped in with other violators. Associating with other violators results in knowing others who sympathize with the offender, and thus it minimizes the punishment. The drug prohibition policy has placed the dispensing of recreational drugs in the hands of drug cartels, criminal gangs, and street thugs. Violence associated with this distribution network has increased annually since the beginning of drug prohibition. What makes more sense is to end drug prohibition and establish a system of regulation and control to be able to protect our children to adulthood. Let's remember that 900,000 teenagers sell drugs, but not alcohol or tobacco. And alcohol and tobacco are regulated and controlled. LEAP does not condone or encourage drug use, but we do know that the three-decade-plus war on prohibition is a total policy failure, and that it's doing much more harm than good. LEAP does believe that the only way we can break the chain of kids starting to use drugs is total legalization, regulation of production, and control of the distribution of these substances is the way forward. Legalization will remove the criminal element and make it more difficult for kids to have access to drugs. It is up to us to ask tough questions of our elected officials and listen carefully to their answers. It's time for a change. Let's work together for a better future for ourselves and our children. This is Terry Nelson at www.leap.cc, signing off.
Again, that website, leap.cc. Dean Becker, 420, Drug War News.
Jesus. We'll be right back. They say the eyes are the windows of the soul, but I love all the little dark holes in your body bag. In your body bag. Your little Willy, he's so, so pretty, and those titties in the body bag. In the body bag. Something tells me he will leave a mess in the body bag. In the body bag. Oh, when we kiss, my eyes are closed, my lips are full, I breathe through my nose. In the body bag. In the body bag.
Oh, Yeah, I just had me a cat that bong hit there. Anyway, welcome back to church. I am Pastor Rex Cat, and this is the flock with Bill Shepherd. And I'm going to introduce the, our preachers next. But first, on the last set of, tracks, you heard, No Means No with Body Bag, The Cracks with Teenage Werewolf with False Start, 420 Drug War News from October 19, 2006, Reverend Ivan Stang on Silent Weapons for Secret Wars, with an intro by Vincent Price, and my apologies for the shoddy sound quality. Little Theodore with Little Theodore with The Blackness. 420 Drug War News from October 18, 2006. Fred Schneider with Monster. Monster Club. From a movie I assume is called Monster Club, starring Vincent Price. And The Fred Allen Show from The Court of Judge Allen. Now let's get on with the preaching. Our preachers will be Joe Biafra and George Carlin. And there will be some drug war news, 420 drug war news, mixed in with the preaching. We're going to start off with Joe Biafra. From his latest spoken word album, In the Grip of Official Treason. Starting off with Fat Mike Speaks. Fat Mike is of Fat Records. And Joe Biafra with the Punk Voter Battle.
You should tell those people who are smoking to bring the crack in here, and you can smoke in here. It's all good. Anyway, thank you very much for coming to the Rock Against Bush tour. This is the last show on this tour for a while, and I'd like to explain to you one thing. First of all, Arizona State University, fuck them. You know, I'm all for higher education. I went to college, but I think it was 5 months ago, they said, yeah, Punk Voter Tour, we're going to do the show. It's going to be free to everybody. We're going to get 10,000 people there. It's going to be great. We're like, we're coming. This is going to be great. Last week, they said, we understand you've been some rabble-rousers. We don't want any violence. No, they heard that we were talking shit about the president, and they said, you can't do the show here anymore. You're fucked. Now, come on, people. Really, this is America. You can't express your viewpoints at a university? This is insane. This is what we're talking about. The FCC, they're taking Howard Stern off the radio. They're taking all kinds of DJs off the radio. You can't fucking say what you want to anymore. This matters, and you should pay attention. Because whether you agree with what we're saying or not, we should be allowed to give our message to people. And some people say, dude, you're not patriotic. You're not supporting the president. You know, this is patriotism. This is loving your country and wanting to make it a better place. That is what patriotism is about. So those people who say that, I don't like them. Well, before any more ado, I'd like to introduce someone that knows a shitload more about me. No, he knows a shitload more about politics than me. He doesn't know anything about me. Anyway, everybody, the ex-king of the dead Kennedys, Mr. Joe Biafra.
Hey,
Thanks a lot, and thanks for coming down to Rock Against Bush. The powers that be that want Arizona State University to just be a factory of robots who don't have any opinion, they lost tonight, because we are all here. And they can try and shut everybody up who says anything a little bit unkind about our lovely president, but the fact remains, nobody has done more to disrespect and exploit the innocent people who died on September 11th and piss on their graves than George Bush. Oh, we've only lost about 600 guys. What's the big deal? Well, that's a very big deal, and it's getting worse every day over there. Plus, we have killed at least 20,000 Iraqis, almost all of them civilians, women, children. Not to mention 1 to 2 million before that who starved to death because of our sanctions. That is not fighting terrorism or liberating anybody. That is genocide. And even if we wind up killing off every single person who ever supported Saddam Hussein, wipe out every Muslim who was ever down with Osama bin Laden, what will their kids be like? And another thing they don't want to tell you is, you know how many American soldiers have been sent back from Iraq because they were wounded or they got sick? 29,000. That's a lot of people, and that's not people who caught a little bit of a bullet wound or got the flu. This is people who got hit by those roadside bombs and got their arms or their legs blown off. People who are going to sit in a wheelchair the rest of their life because they're paralyzed. People who are never going to have a normal life or even be able to hold a job because they've got Gulf War syndrome. It's made them that sick. And you know what one of the main causes of Gulf War syndrome is? Well, remember when John Ashcraft told us we should all be scared of Al-Qaeda blowing up a dirty bomb, meaning they'd get a regular bomb and put radioactive poison on it and blow it up downtown and kill thousands of people? Well, guess who's using dirty bombs right now? We are! We used them in Iraq, we used them in the first Gulf War, used them in Kosovo, and you know how many people who got sent over by Daddy Bush to the first Gulf War are now so sick from Gulf War syndrome they're living on permanent disability? 236,000. So if you know anybody who's in the military or thinking of joining up, and you care about them, now would be a real good time to tell them to get the fuck out of there as fast as they can. Because they're not going to be sent over there to fight terrorism or bring democracy to Iraq. We're over there just to make Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld's corporate friends rich and corner somebody else's oil. And we're letting American soldiers die for this. But the soldiers are catching on. Bush has been waving $10,000 bonuses to get the soldiers to re-enlist and stay in the military, and they're not taking it. Recruiting at military recruiting stations is going down, 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 down. Gee, I wonder why. Well, this is what our government has in reply to that. This was an ad up on a Defense Department website last fall. It says, defend America, serve your community and the nation by joining your local draft board. How many of you are registered for the draft? How many of you do not want to get drafted to go to make Dick Cheney rich? Even in the past 3 days, they pumped a bunch of money into the Selective Service to start setting up and whipping up these draft boards. And they're even talking about a special skills draft where they go mainly after people with computer skills or people who can speak Arabic languages. So whatever you do, don't let it be too obvious you know how to surf the web right now, okay?
Because this war is a scam, a pure and simple scam to make some of those evil people in the world more money than they already have. And with that in mind, since Bill Clinton got impeached for unauthorized weenie moistening, and Governor Gray Davis in California got recalled from office and replaced by a two-bit thug from Hollywood just for raising the tax on cars, shouldn't George Bush, Dick Cheney, and every member of Congress who voted to send another $87 billion towards the war, shouldn't they all be impeached for treason? So what can we do to keep ourselves from being dragged any further down the road to ruin and off a cliff and down the toilet by a Bush, a Dick, and a colon? Don't believe the hype. We are patriotic citizens too, because we're the ones who care enough about our country to say this to the government when they break the law. The protests have already gotten bigger than they ever were against the Vietnam War, and Ashcrack already knows what we look like. So, don't get quiet. Get louder and louder and louder. And I know it can seem hopeless right now, like nobody listens and Fox News and everybody else wants you to think that everybody supports the war. But that's the same situation people faced when we got stuck in the Vietnam War. But in the long run, against incredible odds, the American people rose up and we did stop the Vietnam War. We've done it once, we can do it again. Look how quick we stopped Daddy Bush's Gulf War. That was a little over a month and he had to pull out, in part because the protests got so big and so fierce so fast. But there is a key difference between now and the days of Vietnam, and that is the same mass media outlets on TV, radio, the newspapers that helped expose how bad that war was have now been bought out by the same corporations who profit from war. Thus, they don't really tell people what's really going on over there for a reason. There's money in it for them. Instead, we're not supposed to worry about what's gone wrong in Iraq or how the Bush administration is looting and raping the whole country. No, we're supposed to be worried about Janet Jackson's titty. Oh my God, what are we gonna do about Janet Jackson's titty? They want us all to be sitting on the edge of our chairs, all caught up in which one of those hoes after hoes after hoes, sniveling before those snooty judges on American Idol, will be the one to get to tour the world singing the worst music I've ever heard. They dumb down the news so bad, they cover elections like professional wrestling. Spend more time talking about the attack ads than they do about the issues. So don't hate the media, become the media. All of us. Not just supporting and maybe helping make all those independent underground punk zines and spreading information you find out on the net to people who need to know about it. Main part of becoming the media right now is going one-on-one to people you know at home, school, work, family. And if they start spouting, Rush Limbaugh, I hate the immigrants, it's all the fault of people on welfare that I ain't got enough money, bullshit. Or start spouting, we need to send more troops to Iraq, bullshit. Or start saying, what's the point of voting? There's nothing in it for me, I don't care, bullshit. Don't just dismiss them and tune them out as being rednecks or stupid or unreachable. Sit down and talk to them. Don't argue. Communicate. Get through. Pointing out it is not the fault of Mexicans our economy's going down the toilet. It's the fault of corporations ripping everybody off that our economy's going down the toilet. And here's the way to get through to people that the war is wrong. Even somebody with an American flag on the back of their SUV will listen to this argument, and that is the war on terrorism incorporated, especially what we're doing in Iraq, it's piss poor military strategy. I want to be safe from terrorism too. But every time we go killing a bunch of people in the Middle East or taking over their country and stealing their resources, all we're doing is planting seeds for more Osama bin Ladens, more Al-Qaedas, more suicide bombers, making our own country and our own lives less and less and less safe. That is not good military strategy. And if they still don't get it and come back and say, well, you don't support their troops. Hey, I support the troops when I say, bring them home. Get them out of there. No more Gulf War syndrome. No more getting your limbs blown off. No more Saddam Hussein's or Osama bin Laden's, even if it means waging peace to do it. And national security doesn't just mean spying on everybody and starting wars everywhere. National security means being able to breathe the air. Being able to drink the water and not have to buy it from Coca-Cola in a bottle. National security means not having to worry about getting your hand cut off at work or your job shipped to China. National security means that we can gather in a place like this and hopefully at Arizona State next time without John Ashcroft putting everybody in a camp. National security means that a woman has the right to decide what to do with her own body. That's what a second Bush term means to everybody who ever gets horny. Today the womb, tomorrow the bedroom. National security also means that the Federal Communications Commission is less interested in what Howard Stern says and more interested in Clear Channel and Fox taking over the news and censoring what we're allowed to know. National security means that everybody has a home. Everybody has enough to eat. Everybody has enough money for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And national security means that everybody, even if they ain't got no money, has the right to see a doctor. Which in Canada and in Europe is a guaranteed human right by law. Why not here? What do we got here? How many of you out there have no health insurance? You're one of 44 million Americans who has no health insurance. And you know what Bush's solution to this one is? Guess who has health insurance by federal law now? Fetuses. You know, what kind of twisted fundamentalist Christian Nazi logic is this? The life of the unborn child is sacred. But once they're born, fuck them. Once they're born, look who's too greedy to pay taxes for the schools. Look who's too greedy to give the mother welfare money so she can stay home and raise her kids. Look who's too greedy to fund after-school programs or anything else, but they'll happily build you another jail. Or maybe Sheriff Arpaio can just put you in another tent in a striped uniform or something. And on top of that, You know what the unemployment rate is for people age 18 to 24? 16%. That is over twice the national average. That's you. And Bush's response is to get rid of youth opportunity grants, cut Pell grants so people can go to school practically down to zero, so he can steal more money to spend on more wars, more wars, more wars, and sending somebody to Mars. But hey, I'm down with the Mars thing. Because if we could get a big old spaceship and load it up with people like George Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, Arnold Schwarzenegger, John McCain, send them to Mars and leave them there. Meanwhile, back here on Earth, ABC News reported last May that 60%, that's over half, of the graduating class of 2003 is going to have to move back in with their parents. So much for the economy getting good. So much for the American dream. How many of you are as sick of this as I am? How many of you love and care enough about our country to get off your butt and work to make it better? How many of you think our drug laws are totally insane? How many of you do not want to see King George appoint a Supreme Court that gives Stone Age religious cults power over what women can do with their bodies? And power over who can get married. How many of you think the Patriot Act should be tossed out the window? All of it. And how many of you believe that one of the countries in the world that needs regime change the most is right here? So how many of you are registered to vote? Well, that's the loudest cheer I've heard for voting, but I didn't see enough hands. All right, those of you whose hands are down here, pick up your right hand. Go out into the lobby. Pick up a pen at the Music for America table. Fill out a registration form so you too can help make history instead of sitting and watching it on TV, and start showing up and taking our country back. I'm all for insurrection in the street. I had a great time in Seattle in 99. Had a great time helping disrupt the Democratic and Republican conventions. But insurrection in the street only goes so far without insurrection in the voting booth, too. Gotta have both. And don't tell me, oh, boo-hoo, there's no one to vote for. There's always somebody to vote for if you look at everybody running. That's why I'm a member of the Green Party. And the Music for America people say that if 1%, one measly little percent more of youth had voted in the 2000 election, Bush would not be in the White House today. That's all it takes if people start signing up and showing up. And people have been. The Republicrats are saying, oh, youth are all apathetic. Don't listen to them. They're just for sending to war and selling beer to, right? It ain't going to be some cartoon media thing like soccer moms or NASCAR dads who decides this election. It's going to be concerned, angry, pissed off, patriotic youth who don't want to live in Bush America anymore. And even if you don't like the choice at the top, a main reason to vote is local elections. Local elections are where it's at. It matters to everybody here and touches your daily lives. Who is the mayor? Who is the city council? Who is the sheriff? Who is on the school board? Who is in the state legislature? Because they're the ones who decide how to spend a lot of that money taken away from us by the government in taxes. They can decide whether to spend it, oh, let's see, should we help homeless people or build some low-income housing or a rail system to get around the greater Phoenix area? Or should we spend it on a stadium for the worst team in the National Football League? That doesn't have to happen if we show up and vote, does it? School boards matter too, because they can spend the money helping poor kids and giving them computer lessons, or fighting it out in court to teach the Bible in biology class. And even more importantly, in local elections, hardly anybody shows up to vote in them. And you know what that means? It means that if more people like us show up and vote in the local elections, we stand a damn good chance of getting good people elected and good laws passed, and no more Sheriff Arpaio in the goddamn tent camp. Plus, local elections are where you have a privilege that they do not have in Canada and they do not have in Europe. It is called the ballot initiative. The propositions where you can vote yes or no on changing the law when the politicians are too corrupt or chicken shit to do it. And when we show up and pay attention to those ballot propositions and vote smart, that's when we get medical marijuana, rent control, living wage, a high-speed train system between Phoenix and Tucson and why not L.A. and Vegas. But we have to show up. And even if we wind up losing the first time, the good person doesn't get in, the good ballot initiative doesn't get passed, it does not mean we've lost forever. It just means we've widened the base of the pyramid to get 5 or 10 more of our friends to register and show up and vote next time. And then we start winning and taking back our country. I'm hoping this whole eruption of anti-Bush and anti-war power will bring on a much bigger version of the anti-corporation, anti-globalization movement that did so much good in Seattle, and as far as I know, is even active on the Arizona State campus in spite of the people running the place. United Students Against Sweatshops and many more. This is where the action starts. And there's so many things you can do just as one individual person to fight corporations. Don't let the more radical than thou ever tell you that just because you're not doing as much as they're doing or not doing the same thing that they're doing, you might as well do nothing wrong. Doing something is better than doing nothing every time. And to fight back against corporate power, it begins with the individual person. It begins with you. If you want to, just make a little vow to yourself, I'm not cooperating with corporations or their agenda anymore. They can't have me. Starting with, don't give them your money anymore. No more money to chain stores. No more money to chain restaurants. No more money to Walmart or Home Depot or Blockbuster or whatever. And keep the money in the local businesses who keep the money in the community and don't send people's jobs to China. So as they say in showbiz, let's roll. Get your ass over to that voter registration table. Sign up. Get your friends to sign up and then make sure all of them and you show up this fall and every election after that to vote smart and take back our democracy and fix our country. Because as it stands now, our hijacked, unconstitutional government of the people by corporations for corporations must be overthrown.
For the Drug Truth Network, it's the 420 Drug War News. The following is taken from the Wall Street Journal. Uribe versus the Drug Thugs. To get an idea of how long Afghanistan's war against narco-trafficking terrorists could last, the Colombian experience with criminals of a similar ilk might be instructive, though not encouraging. That thought occurred to me after an interview with Colombian President Alvaro Uribe in New York. Mr. Uribe may be the most clear-thinking, courageous ally in the war on terror that the U.S. has in Latin America, and Washington has spent billions of dollars trying to eradicate coca plants in his country. That is to say, there has been no lack of political will in the fight against drug thugs in Colombia. If other world leaders have gone wobbly on fighting terrorism, Mr. Uribe has not. Quote, under no circumstances will the government weaken its policy on democratic security, end quote, he told me emphatically. But as the popular president begins his second four-year term, his challenges are daunting. While it is true that guerrilla kidnappings and killings are down sharply since he instituted his policy of democratic security in 2002, it is also true that Colombians have rising expectations of the man who did so much in his first term to push back the terrorists and restore Colombian confidence. The trouble is that despite these efforts, the persistent demand for illicit cocaine from the U.S. and Europe is still feeding an organized crime network that has little incentive to take up honest work. Drug finance terrorism remains a constant drain on resources and an impediment to Colombian development. End quote.
Roundup. Now with Cosmo Flux, responsible for the destruction of 30% of the Amazonian rainforest, more than 1 million Colombian refugees, and millions in profits for Monsanto Laboratories.
Next up, from the Independent newspaper in the UK, LSD helps alcoholics put down the bottle. A single dose of the hallucinogenic drug LSD is an effective treatment for alcoholism. This according to research led by British doctors more than 40 years ago. Studies on thousands of alcoholics treated with the drug in the early 1960s before it became popular as a psychedelic street drug showed it helped trigger a change in mental attitude, leading drinkers to quit. Here's a current quote from Erica Dyack, professor of history of medicine at the University of Alberta, who said, quote, the LSD somehow gave these people experiences that psychologically took them outside of themselves and allowed them to see their own unhealthy behavior more objectively and then determined to change it, end quote. Country Joe and the Fish had a song, went a little bit like this. Well, if you're tired or a bit run down, you can't seem to get your feet back on the ground. Maybe you ought to try a little bit of LSD. I ain't saying you ought to do it. I'm just saying you shouldn't be arrested for trying to quit alcohol. Sure helped me. I haven't done alcohol or LSD in over 20 years. Dean Becker, 420 Drug War News.
Dateline Hellberbia. Walmart Wasteland USA. Monster teenagers shot up their school again today. What makes them do it? Video games? Marilyn Manson? For a live report in front of the now empty building, here's Clonetta Hairspray with all the exclusive blood-buttered details. What does make them do it? Well, it couldn't possibly have anything to do with parents, or the fact that school really does suck, and so does a horizon of sterile dead-end careers where you're chained to a keyboard 80 hours a week with only enough free time to go home, rent a video, and pass out on the couch. Till one day you wake up and resign yourself to being the same sort of failure that you hated about your parents. And there really is a mandated caste system where favored bullies of both sexes get patted on the head for hazing and beating up undesirables of the lower caste. I come to dissect teenage rampage superstars, not to praise them. But every time this happens, what gnaws inside and continues to fascinate is, this could have been me. Why not me? After all, wanting to destroy the school and annihilate the bullies is a normal rite of passage of growing up in America. Sure, I wanted to kill the quarterback and firebomb my gym teacher's office in seventh grade, but by ninth grade, the quarterback had chilled and I had chilled and we were more or less friends. Plus, I had no access to guns or so much money I could go out and buy them. But still, what made them do it? What made them actually go through with it? Doom? Marilyn Manson? Be serious. Millions of other people play Doom and don't run out and kill the school. Millions more check out genuinely bad things on the internet and don't turn into bad people. The two Columbine guys in Littleton, Colorado, were a month away from graduation. Free at last after 12 long years and never have to see all those people they hated again. Why? It makes no sense. If Manson was such a big influence, why didn't they wait 5 more days and go see his kick-ass live show in Denver? It makes no sense. That's like saying the very music that made some troubled kid happy is what led them to kill themselves. It makes no sense. I'm glad I didn't go to Columbine. I went to Boulder High School, about 20 miles north. Even then, Columbine had a reputation as a darkly conservative rich kid's school, possibly the wealthiest in the whole state. Sure wish my school could afford equipment to get class credit learning how to make videos. But what really creeped me out about Columbine was the impression that if you didn't fit in where you were supposed to fit in, you had nowhere to go but to join the anti-click click. Huh? At least at Boulder High, there was a large enough pool of mutants that creative degenerates like myself could have their fingers in several different pies, even a straight one or two. None went deep enough for me to feel a sense of acceptance or belonging, but deep down inside, I knew I was me. I was my own person. I liked that. There were reports that outcasts at Columbine, like at so many of today's schools, were punched in the head in the hallway as they went to class, pissed on in the showers by the jocks. Stuff like that would never have been tolerated at Boulder High. Sure, there were thugs, but they knew that no matter how rich or athletic you were, you could get expelled, or worse yet, kicked off the team if you did stuff like that. Contrast that with this quote from a 250-pound defensive lineman from Columbine High School. Columbine is a good, clean place except for those rejects. Most kids didn't want them there. They were into witchcraft. They were into voodoo dolls. Sure, we teased them, but what do you expect when kids come to school with weird hairdos? They're a bunch of homos. The whole school's disgusted with them. If you want to get rid of someone, interesting language, usually you tease them. So the whole school would call them homos. And when they did something sick, we'd tell them. Nowadays, schools too often do push sports over learning. Treat their jocks as coddled gods to prepare them for their destiny as knights of the business round table, to throw around their brute privilege as fiendishly competitive adults. Meanwhile, girls are beaten down and kept in line by schools, media, and parents alike. No matter who or what you are, you're fat, you're ugly, you're inadequate. Your breasts are too small, your butt is too big, your butt is too small, your breasts are too big, worse yet, your brain is too big. And if you're not as thin and perfect as the plastic beautiful few, there must be something horribly wrong with you. So buy this, and buy this, and buy this, and buy this. A survey earlier that fateful year identified the Columbine student body as 60% evangelical Christian. A strain my uncle once called obnoxiously religious. I have no problem with people having spiritual values, but when anyone tries to force their spiritual values on others through monkeying with the law or intimidation or violence, I fight like a cat in a corner. What would Jesus do this? What would Jesus do that? Who cares what Jesus would do? This is the 21st century. I doubt the shooters at Columbine are the only ones who have rightly or wrongly felt seriously threatened by this. Being bullied to believe is the strongest reason I know of not to let prayer back in public schools. Speaking of which, can you believe there's now not one but two sets of Columbine parents running around the country pimping their daughters' tragic deaths at huge religious revivals, saying theirs was the one who said she believed in Jesus Christ right before she got shot, while the official investigation showed that the girl who actually said that is very much alive and chose not to use that as a cash cow for God Incorporated. My sister's dead too. I know what grief can do, but let's cash in. Creepy. Other parents have allowed themselves to be hornswoggled by lawyers, suing the school, suing the sheriff, suing the other parents as though enriching carpet-bagging litigation crocodiles will somehow bring them closure. In West Paducah, Kentucky, where a kid shot up the morning prayer circle, parents of three victims are not only suing the school district, but several teachers, various students, manufacturers and distributors of video games and movies, and what they call pornographic or anarchistic websites, and they're even suing the homeowner that the murder weapons were stolen from. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get real. There ain't no such thing as closure. All the lawsuits, religion, and happy drugs in the world are not going to reverse the fact that my sister and her husband, who I loved like a brother, were killed in a rock climbing accident in 96. No little magic closure is ever going to bring them back or make everything all better. The loss, the longing, that hollow feeling in my gut will never completely go away. Nor should it. You deal with it and keep moving on. Closure doesn't exist. So don't ever let anybody try to sell it to you when you're hurting. The creepiest school shooting rampage to me is still the one in Arkansas. 13 and 11-year-old boys, the 11-year-old supposedly the dominant one. Of course, a U.S. Senate committee led by that noted legislative titan Sam Brownback of Kansas and his sidekick and head of the Democratic Leadership Council, Senator Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut, said music was once again at fault. They flew up one of the teachers from Jonesboro, claiming the older gun child was a fine boy till he started listening to that Tupac Shaker and Bone Thugs and Harmony. What she didn't mention was that he also sang in the church choir regularly, and that at age 13 and 11, those kids knew how to hotwire and drive a van, and that they learned how to shoot almost as soon as they could walk and knew right where to find Grandpa's guns when the big day came. They shot only girls and a female teacher. The older one said it was because one of the girls had jilted him by refusing to become his girlfriend on demand. Where did that come from? Sorry, Senator, but bigotry, sexism, and sharpshooters dressed like Rambo in their baby pictures, that doesn't come from music, that comes from parents. So ban black trench coats, that'll solve the problem. The Columbine shooters were not in the trench coat mafia or Marilyn Manson fans, by the way. And Lord, none of these terrible things would have happened if we just hung up the Ten Commandments in all the classrooms. So we can make everybody memorize Thou Shalt Not Kill before they graduate and join the Marines. And better yet, now that they've finally come up with a book that kids are willing to quit playing video games in order to read because they like them so much, well, we've got to ban Harry Potter because it mentions witchcraft. Leave it to bonehead school officials and cops to overreact so far off the scale, so long as it avoids real problems and solutions. Instead of teaching tolerance, they are now promoting more intolerance. A woman I know who teaches in Fort Collins High School, further north of Columbine, said that on the day of the shooting, the administration called an emergency staff meeting, and one of the people there said, "We've got to start profiling those kids." So, with Columbine as an excuse, open season on weirdos has begun. In Salt Lake City, a kid got kicked out of school for wearing a t-shirt that said vegan on it because it promoted gang activity. In Pennsylvania, a girl was suspended for saying out loud that she understood how someone who was teased mercilessly could snap. In Florida, a girl was suspended for bringing nail clippers to class, while another 16-year-old boy got booted for showing a miniature Confederate flag to a friend at lunch while they were discussing the Civil War. Since 1996, 20 students in four states have been suspended for possession of Alka-Seltzer. No matter how nauseating the curriculum, thou shalt not bring fizzies to class. Near Dallas, a 13-year-old spent 5 days in jail because of his Halloween essay that got extra credit for the teacher. Another got 3 days in jail in Wilmington, North Carolina, because he wrote "The End is Near" on a computer backdrop, so they charged him with communicating a threat. And 2 10-year-olds were charged with a felony in Virginia, trying to injure or kill their teacher because they squirted soap gel in the teacher's water bottle. The counterattack on kids who think has gone from funny to fierce to downright dangerous and sick. Sam Donaldson quacking away about the coming onslaught of goth gangs had me rolling on the floor with laughter. Less funny, however, is the Crime Prevention Resource Center out of Fort Worth, Texas, group of cops and concerned citizens who tell school officials and parent groups that goths are as dangerous a gang as Crips and Bloods. And that any child caught listening to Marilyn Manson should be put in a mental hospital. More and more school kids are developing serious back and shoulder problems thanks to lockers being torn out so they have to carry all their books with them everywhere they go, preferably in see-through backpacks. In DeSalle High School in New Orleans, they don't just drug test athletes, they cut off a lock of everybody's hair every year and test them all for drugs. Further still out in Looney Land is Odessa, Texas, where students at Permian High School are now surrounded by a giant security fence, surveillance cameras even on the school buses, and must all wear barcode badges around their necks at all times that can be scanned to show everything they've done wrong and their medical records. Regular drills include sealing the hallways where students must drop their belongings where they stand, and all the belongings are run through metal detectors. Live SWAT teams drill right in school in Pittsburgh and Chicago. And our government and the private security industry have found a way to get it on the game, too. Straight from Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, let's play Get the Geeks. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms has unveiled their Mosaic 2000 program, where school officials can secretly vet and rate potential troublemakers on a scale of 1 to 10 and have the feds tell them if they should kick them out or lock them up. And Pinkerton, yes, that Pinkerton, when they're not busy shooting union activists in earlier part of the century, Pinkerton offers cash prizes and t-shirts to kids who turn in their fellow students for being too weird under their WAVE program. Among the symptoms of dangerous behavior initially listed by Pinkerton are bad grades, little interest in school, and excessive feelings of isolation or rejection. This, too, could have been me. It was me. Time Magazine has their How to Spot a Troubled Kid cover issue, and they list some handy guidelines on how to spot a depressed child. Acting up in school. Refusing to take part in school and family events. Seeking out music, art and games and books with death-related themes. Saving Private Ryan. And feeling that their family, peers, and teachers disapprove of them. This is a medical disorder? It is now. While in preschoolers, Times experts say to look for overactivity, sad appearance, irritability, and tendency to portray the world as bleak. And the answer, of course, is not more sugar bomb cereal for the overactivity before school, not more Pokemon. The answer is drugs! No, not the fun drugs. But overused, abused narcotics like Prozac, Ritalin, Paxil, Zoloft, Xanax, made and overpriced by the very multinational drug cartels, companies, that help finance the Just Say No commercials, that help drug our paranoid populace into tolerating the drug war. Have you drugged your kid today? According to ABC News, 7 million American school children are now doped up on meds, up from 100,000 only 20 years ago, pre-Reagan. Kids in America are 10 times more likely to be dosed with Ritalin in this country than they are in Europe, and twice as likely as Canada. There's enough examples just among people I know that I fear today's Ritalin kids are at risk of becoming tomorrow's speed freaks and junkies. But what if school really is boring? What if parents, teachers, and peers are stupid? Does that mean we should drug our best and brightest minds of the future into submission and stupidity just to get them to obey? Smart remark? Must be hyperactive. Bored with class? That's attention deficit disorder. We're drugging our kids so we don't have to talk to them. Overscheduling them with stupid activities instead of asking what they really want to do, or worse yet, spending actual time together with them. You have your own TV and computer in your room. Now go away. And let's not forget those new SUVs and minivans with built-in drop-down television screens so parents can sedate and ignore their kids without wasting a minute of precious cell phone time. Well, guess what? The shooter in Springfield, Oregon was on Ritalin and Prozac, too. Yet he heard voices and felt he couldn't make them stop. The one in Pearl, Mississippi was beaten by his brother and told by his mother that he was fat, stupid, lazy, and wouldn't amount to anything. He, too, reported hearing voices. The one in Kentucky had been branded gay in the school newspaper, then told by the administration that was no big deal. Guess it was to him. According to The Nation, the 13-year-old in Arkansas had been molested for the past 4 years. And the woman in South Carolina who barely escaped a death sentence for pushing her car into a lake and drowning her own children was repeatedly molested as a teenager by her stepfather, who no one suspected, let alone ever punished, because he was a respectable pillar of the community and head of the local Christian coalition. Nothing is more dangerous than someone who truly believes their life is destroyed and they have nothing left to live for and therefore nothing to lose. Who don't necessarily want to die but feel they have no choice. Who are pretty sure who screwed up their lives and figure, if I have to die, I'm taking them with me. This has been a brutal fact of ghetto life since time immemorial. But now that it's hit white suburbia, kids who don't buy into the game are all fair game. But no matter how much you profile and put up cameras and harass and ban music, some vacant stranger out there somewhere, raised on guns or raised on hate, mind fucked by pedophile relatives, molested by Ritalin and Prozac, smothered by older brothers, successful siblings, and the pressure to be perfect, will find a way to be pop star for a day, and will tune in and watch every time. The Columbine shooters thought there should be a movie about their lives, directed by Tarantino, or get this, Steven Spielberg. There's something very Ed Wood about that, if you ask me. And the hockey dad in Massachusetts who slammed someone else's dad's head into the locker room floor in front of the kids again and again until he was dead, what music did he listen to? And the online day trader in Atlanta who lost his shirt and gunned down his brokers, was he driven to kill by the influence of the Wall Street Journal? This could have been me. Why not me? Why not me? I do what I can to fill in the blanks for people who've only lived in the era of Reagan, Bush, Clinton greed, who never knew a time when corporations were supposed to obey the law, when government politicians weren't so brazenly corrupt, when there were actual differences between the Democrat and Republican Party, when there were actually people worth voting for and dreams worth believing in, when commercial radio didn't totally suck. When news media was independent and took their job seriously enough to report actual news, illuminating important things that were really going on and showed why they were important and affected people's lives. When we felt responsibility for people who were hurting and didn't turn our snouts and leave them begging in the street. When people come of age now, they see a horizon of greed, hate, corruption, pollution, of absentee parents, failed go, go, go lives, see no hope for finding meaningful work, no hope for being honestly and truly loved, no hope for lasting relationships with anyone or anything. Admire thrills instead of courage, because sooner or later, when you snoop behind the music, everyone you looked up to and respected turns out to suck anyway. Taught not to hope, or how small battles fighting for what you can change can build up to changing what it looks like you can't. How do we empower people to grow up unafraid to be their own person? And by sometimes painful, sometimes clumsy trial and error, find out and flesh out who they are. What's wrong with an identity? Let the bad seeds grow, and the drive and vision to break out and strike a nerve, and at least not be another dysfunctional robot. How I wish I could tell the people who snap, high school isn't that important, and it's not the best years in most people's lives, and in the long run, when you look back, it doesn't matter much anyway, does it? And the sooner you stand up and piss on its grave, head into the dawn and get the hell out of town, find and build your own world and really be your own person, blunder into fellow mutants who see the same things you do, and know there's something better somewhere out there when you make the effort to create it, the smaller, more laughable, and totally unimportant those golden teenage memories and rose-colored scars become.
For the Drug Truth Network, it's the 420 Drug War News.
This is Phil Smith of the Drug War Chronicle with this week's corrupt cop story for the Drug Truth Network. This week we're going to Tulsa, Oklahoma, where a federal civil rights lawsuit filed by the husband of an exotic dancer is shining a light on some sordid business involving a pair of Tulsa police officers. The lawsuit was filed by Shannon Coyle, the husband of dancer Crystal Garr. Coyle was arrested on drug charges last year by Officer Travis Ludwig after Coyle filed an internal affairs complaint against Ludwig because Ludwig was sleeping with Garr. Coyle was arrested on drug charges last year by Officer Travis Ludwig after he filed an internal affairs complaint against Ludwig because Ludwig was sleeping with Garr, Coyle's wife. Coyle was arrested first on marijuana possession charges, then again on methamphetamine and paraphernalia charges in raids led by Ludwig. When Coyle found out Ludwig was sleeping with his wife, he text messaged him, warning him to stay away. Ludwig then took those messages to a deputy prosecutor who okayed another arrest for Coyle, this time for intimidating a witness, Ludwig. All the charges were dropped once officials became aware of the affair, and Ludwig has been disciplined by the department, but he still faces Coyle's lawsuit. So does Officer Israel Rodriguez, whom Coyle also accuses of sleeping with his wife. Ludwig and Garr currently live together, although she remains married to Coyle, the father of her four children. Oh, by the way, the deputy prosecutor who okayed Coyle's third arrest, she also had been sleeping with the busy Ludwig. Read all about it. This Oklahoma law enforcement patent place in the Tulsa world, which has in-depth coverage and a handy chart with all the players. As always, there are more corrupt cop stories this week. Check them out online at www.stopthedrugwar.org. And be sure to check out our new speakeasy on the website, where you can join us in blogging about the drug war and how to end drug prohibition.
Corruption charges. Corruption? Corruption is government intrusion into market efficiencies in the form of regulation. That's Milton Friedman. He got a goddamn Nobel Prize. We have laws against it precisely so we can get away with it. Corruption is our protection. Corruption keeps us safe and warm. Corruption is why you and I are prancing around in here instead of fighting over scraps of meat out in the street. Corruption is why we win.
The following story comes from the agency France Presse. 16 Italian politicians tested positive for cocaine or cannabis use in a trick drugs test carried out by a television satire show. The show tested 50 parliamentarians by applying what appeared to be makeup to their faces, telling they were to appear in a debate, but the makeup actually consisted of chemicals that could detect the presence of drugs in sweat on the participants. It detected cocaine in 4 of the politicians and cannabis in 12. Both the drugs are banned in Italy. Dean Becker, 420 Drug War News.
I think about stuff like that. It's interesting to me, like I said. Suicide's interesting. Life is filled with interesting things. That's why I could never commit suicide. I'm having too much fun keeping an eye on you folks, watching what you do. Human behavior. That's what I like. Humans do some really interesting things. Like, besides killing ourselves, we also kill each other. Murder. And we're the only ones who do that, by the way. We're the only species on Earth that deliberately kills members of our own species for personal gain. Or pleasure. Sometimes it's just fun. We're also the only species that deliberately kills members of another species for personal gain. Or pleasure. That's what hunters do. They kill for pleasure. That's us. Human beings. Interesting folks. Murderers. Here's an interesting form of murder we come up with. Assassination. You know what's interesting about assassination? Well, not only does it change those popularity polls in a big fucking hurry, but it's also interesting to notice who it is we assassinate. Do you ever notice who it is? Stop to think of who it is we kill. It's always people who've told us to live together in harmony and try to love one another. Jesus, Gandhi, Lincoln, John Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, Malcolm X, John Lennon. They all said, try to live together peacefully. Bam! Right in the fucking head. Apparently we're not ready for that. Yeah, that's difficult behavior for us. We're too busy sitting around trying to think up ways to kill each other. Here's one we came up with. It's efficient, too. Genocide, you know? Killing large numbers of people simply because they don't look like you, they don't talk like you, and they don't have the same kind of hats you do. You ever notice that anytime you see two groups of people who really hate each other, chances are good they're wearing different kind of hats. Keep an eye on that. It might be important. But anytime there's genocide, there are always mass graves. Right? Every time we kill some dictator and go marching through his country, we always find mass graves. Thousands and thousands of dead bodies of people the dictator killed. And everybody over here gets horrified. Whoa, mass graves, whoa. Well, shit, what's a guy supposed to do with a couple thousand people he just killed? Dig separate holes? Fuck that shit. It's labor intensive. Get real. The whole idea of killing a large number of people at one time in one place is convenience. Efficiency. Throw them in the fucking hole. Look at it this way. At least the dictator had the decency to throw a little dirt on them. Give the guy some credit. Dictator's a busy man. Got a lot on his mind. Like trying to figure out who's planning to kill him. So he can pick them up, put them in prison, and torture them. Torture. That's another one of our heartwarming human activities we picked up along the way. Torturing each other. You want to hear a really cool torture that the Romans invented? They also used it as a form of capital punishment. It's really creative. They would take the guy in question, stuff him in a burlap sack, seal the sack up real tight, and throw it in the river. But, and here's the creative part, inside the sack, with the guy, they would put a dog, a monkey, and a snake. Okay? A dog, a monkey, and a snake. That's fucking creative. Imagine being inside a burlap sack, underwater, in the dark, sitting next to a drowning monkey. Think he'd be moving around a little bit? The dog would be going apeshit, we know that. And the snake, well, he'd probably be getting curious about what all the activity was inside the sack. He might do anything. Whatever he did, it would probably involve venom and his teeth. You know what you'd be doing? You'd be praying to God that the snake bit the monkey and the dog ate the snake. Praying. Yeah. Then it would be just you and the dog. Man and his best friend. Drowning together. Maybe before you died, you could teach him a few tricks. Roll over and play dead wouldn't be too difficult, would it? Just a thought. Just a playful thought. By the way, I assume you're noticing that all these activities I'm mentioning, murder, torture, genocide, these are all things human beings do, not animals, those creatures we feel superior to. This is us. Here's another one of our spiritually uplifting activities. We don't do this one much anymore, but it used to be really big. Human sacrifice. I miss that. The Aztecs loved human sacrifice, and they were good at it. Well, they got a lot of practice. For instance, right around the year 1500, the Aztecs sacrificed 80,000 people in one ceremony. Okay? 80,000 people, one ceremony. You know what the occasion was? They were opening a new temple. Nothing like religion for a little entertainment, huh? Especially that old-time religion. Know how the Aztecs went about their sacrificing? Here's how they did it. They would do it right out in public, right in front of everybody, big town, beautiful city square, 20, 30,000 people looking on. They would take the guy, lay him on an altar, cut his chest open, pull his heart out, and hold it up in the air while it was still beating. Got that? Cut his chest open, pull his heart out, and hold it up in the air while it was still beating. You know what you call that? Theater. That is fucking theater. And although the procedure may have been a little too crude to be considered the first bypass surgery, it could easily be seen as an early form of organ donor program. The Aztecs, human beings, just like us. Not too long ago, 500 years, Columbus had already landed. This was just south of here, Mexico. And by the way, those hearts didn't go to waste. Did not go to waste. Because right after the ceremonies, the royal family, naturally, would enjoy another one of our amusing activities, cannibalism. Imagine that, chowing down on another human being. You got to be all out of beef jerky, man. You got to be really fucking hungry. But it happens, doesn't it? Still happens to this day. Bunch of people stranded in the wilderness, run out of Pop-Tarts, got to eat something. Might as well be Steve. And how do you decide who to eat first? How do you decide who's first on the barbecue rack? Do you pick on the little guy because he's skinny and he can't fight back? Or do you all gang up on the bodybuilder because he got a lot of steaks and chops on him? These are things human beings have to consider. One more of these charming diversions of ours. Necrophilia. Huh? Now there's a hobby for you. Fucking a corpse. Takes a special kind of guy, don't you think? But it happens, More than you might think. It happens among humans. Animals don't do that. Animals don't fuck their dead. A rat will do a lot of gross things, but he will not fuck a dead rat. It wouldn't even occur to him. Only a human being would think to fuck someone who just died. We gotta be the most interesting critters on the planet. And then we wonder why a UFO doesn't just land and say hello. You know the best thing about necrophilia? You don't have to bring flowers. Yeah, usually they're already there. Isn't that nice? It's nice. It's convenient. Human beings will do anything. Anything. I am convinced. That's why when all those beheadings started in Iraq, didn't bother me. I took it right in stride. A lot of people here were horrified. Ah, beheadings, beheadings. What, are you fucking surprised? Just one more form of extreme human behavior. Besides, who cares about some mercenary civilian contractor from Oklahoma who gets his head cut off? Fuck him. Fuck him. Hey, Jack, you don't want to get your head cut off? Stay the fuck in Oklahoma. Stay the fuck in Oklahoma. They ain't cutting off heads in Oklahoma, as far as I know. But I do know this. You strap on a gun and go strutting around some other man's country, you better be ready for some action, Jack. You better be ready for some action. People are touchy about that sort of thing. And let me ask you this while I have you good, clean Americans here. This is a moral question, not rhetorical. I'm looking for the answer. What is the moral difference between cutting off one guy's head, or two, or three, or five, or ten, and dropping a big bomb on the hospital and killing a whole bunch of sick kids? Has anyone in authority explained this to you? I have not heard a word. Didn't get an email, didn't get a postcard, didn't get an instant message. Not a fucking thing. Now, in case you're wondering why I have a certain interest and fascination, let's call it, with torture and genocide and human sacrifice, necrophilia, it's because all of these things go to show me once again, but over and over and over, what beasts we human beings really are. You know, when you get right down to it, when you get right down to it, human beings are nothing more than ordinary jungle beasts, savages, no different from the Cro-Magnon people who lived 25,000 years ago in the Pleistocene forest eating grubs off of rotten logs. No different. Our DNA hasn't changed substantially in 100,000 years. We're still operating out of the lower brain, the reptilian brain, fight or flight, kill or be killed. Now, we like to think we've evolved and advanced because we can build a computer, fly an airplane, travel underwater. We can write a sonnet, paint a painting, compose an opera. But you know something? We're barely out of the jungle on this planet. Barely out of the fucking jungle. What we are is semi-civilized beasts with baseball caps and automatic weapons. And this civilization of ours that we're so proud of, this civilization with its so-called civilized behavior, you ever stop and realize how fragile all this is? How easily it could all just break right down? Just break right down. Wouldn't take much. Probably happened in less than 2 years. Wouldn't take much to throw us right back into barbaric times. All you'd have to do would be eliminate electricity. That's all. But completely eliminate electricity. So, no electricity, no lights. You're back to candles and lanterns, campfires and bonfires. Batteries couldn't be recharged. Generators couldn't be refueled because fuel is pumped electrically. So is water, by the way. So no lights, no fuel, no water. No computers. And computers run everything. And among the many things computers run that operate on electricity are security systems. It's in all of our jails and prisons and nut houses. So suddenly, without electricity, all across America, the gates and cell doors of penitentiaries and mental institutions would fly open. And out would come all of our old friends. The ones who've been away at camp. Serial killers, mass murderers, felony rapists, armed robbers, carjackers, home invaders, thieves, burglars, kidnappers, sadists, pedophiles, sexual predators, pimps, pushers, pornographers, speed freaks, crackheads, sick, junkies, all the ethnic street gangs, black, Spanish, and Asian gangs, Japanese Yakuza, Russian Mafia, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, Sicilian hitmen, Italian mobsters, Jamaican and Colombian drug gangs. And those are just the ones we caught. Let's not forget their counterparts still on the outside right now, waiting to hook up with their prison buddies so they can start a new organization, the American Federation of Sociopaths. Just what the country needs. Another special interest group. 8 to 10 million of them there'd be, counting all the parolees and all the probationers and the ones who've never been caught. 8 to 10 million bitter, angry, violent, sexually hyperactive alpha males with nothing to do, no hobbies, no medications, no scruples. Just a bunch of bad guys looking for a good time. Maybe dropping by your house. Hi, hope we're not intruding. Got any beer? Oh, good. Well, I got about 1,400 really thirsty guys here. How about women? Got any women? Oh, just your wife, huh? Well, I think we can make that work. Now, boys, there's a lady here, so I want you to mind your manners and wait your turn. Police wouldn't help you. They'd be gone at the first sign of trouble. They'd be home protecting their own families. So would the Army and the National Guard. You'd be alone. You'd be on your own. You'd be SOL and JWF. Shit out of luck and jolly well fucked. Shit out of luck and jolly well fucked. After a couple of years of living like that, beheadings would be the least of your problems. People would be lining up to be beheaded. So let's get back to suicide, which now seems like a reasonable alternative.
You have just heard George Carlin from Life is Worth Losing. The track is called Extreme Human Behavior. Before that, 420 Drug War News. From October 22nd, 2006, Jello Biafra from Become the Media with Hellberbia. Before that, 420 Drug War News from October 21st, 2006. And opening that set was Joe Biafra from his latest spoken word release, number 8, In the Grip of Official Treason. And I got an email from the Reverend concerning a independent media journalist who got killed in Mexico. And it says on top, okay, the URL is www.narconews.com/issue43/article2223.html. Brad Will, New York documentary filmmaker and independent indie media reporter, assassinated by a pro-government gunshot in Osaka. I hope I pronounced this correctly. It's spelled O-A-X-A-C-A. Osaka, I guess, while reporting the story. Photographer Oswald Ramirez of the Daily Milenio, wounded in attack by shooters for Ulysses Ruiz Ortez in Santa Lucia del Camino. By Al Gordano. The other journalism with the other campaign in Chihuahua, I think it's called. October 27th, 2006. Brad Wilt 36, a documentary filmmaker and reporter for Indie Media in New York. Bolivia and Brazil, died today of a gunshot to the chest when pro-government attackers opened fire on a barricade in the neighborhood of Santa Lucia del Camino, on the outskirts of Oaxaca, Mexico. He died with his video camera in his hands. And I'm just going to read an excerpt of this. Brad went to Oaxaca in early October to document the story that commercial media simulators like Rebecca Romero of Associated Press distort instead of report. The story of a people sick and tired of repression and injustice who take back the government that rightfully is theirs. In that context, the assassination is also a consequence of what happens when the independent media must do the work that big media fails to do. To tell the truth, my friend and colleague since 1996, when we labored together at 88.7 FM Steal This Radio on New York's Lower East Side, I bumped into him again in Bolivia in 2004 during a public reception held by the Narco News School of Authentic Journalism, and again on the Yucatan Peninsula last January, where he came to cover the beginnings of the Zapatista Other campaign. Brad died to bring the authentic story to the world. And if you want to see the rest of the story, I'm going to be placing the URL in my blog. Okay, this one is from the Toronto Star, this next reading. It's called, Democrats Target Christian Heavyweight. High-profile Senate slipping in polls. Defeat would be sit back for right. This is by, I think it's by Tim Harper of the Washington Bureau. Quakertown, Pennsylvania. The ghosts, goblins, and vampires are given the run. The ghosts, goblins, and vampires are given the run of the street in this town's annual Halloween parade. But some believe the scariest guy walking the Broad Street route this afternoon is the well-groomed 48-year-old in the sport jacket and top pants. Top pants. Spelled T-A-U-P. Pants. Rick Santorum didn't dress as a target, but he may as well have. As this country's most outspoken and polarizing social conservative, As this country's most outspoken and polarizing social conservative, the two-term Pennsylvania Republican senator has been in Democrats' crosshairs for 2 years. Now they're moving in for the kill. Democrats may win the House of Representatives in midterm elections in 2 weeks, but if they can't take the Senate, it will still be considered a successful night if they took down Santorum. Analysts on both sides of the political spectrum in this country believe a Santorum defeat is at least a temporary setback to the conservative Christian movement in this country. Since Democrats nominated Bob Casey, a moderate with high name recognition in the state, Santorum has never led in any poll with Recent Casey leads pegged at anything about 5 to 13 points. I don't feel under siege at all, Santorum told the Toronto Star in an interview. 12 years of taking tough public positions have made him a lot of enemies, he says. There's a lot of folks outside this state who have a hard time with some of my positions. His supporters, though, have their worries. His values are my values, says Mike Westfall, an engineering technician from the community of North Pennsylvania. But he's number one in the bullseye right now. I know that. I'm not naive. In a sense, I think there will be a slight setback for social conservatives. It's going to be a tough year. Carol Schur of Doylestown, Pennsylvania, says the unpopular Iraq war got in the way of the social conservative movement. Why do I support Rex Santorum? How much time do you have? She says, awaiting long signs for her town at Santorum headquarters in her hometown. I worry about the children. I worry about our entertainment system and our children getting more hypersensitive. Oh, hold on. Getting more hypersensitized. I'm afraid of turning on the health channel on my TV and seeing an abortion of a child in his 8th month. In its 8th month? Anyway, carrying on. Is that far-fetched? It might not be if the other side gets in. Santorum is featured on the cover of this week's National Review, probably the preeminent conservative magazine in the country. Beside the question, will Pennsylvania do the right thing? Maybe the most important election for conservatives this year, a magazine says. A great senator fights for his political life. The magazine says in the article highlighting the passion and principles of Santorum, there may not be more important elections for conservatives in the entire country this year, the National Review concludes. A defeat, it says, will have a chilling effect on social conservatives, conservatism in the U.S. Santorum is the third ranking Republican in the Senate, but likely ranks first when it comes to polarizing figures. Former Democratic Senator Bob Kerry sparred with a newcomer, Santorum, during his first term and famously wondered aloud, Santorum, isn't Latin for asshole? In an interview with the Associated Press in 2003, Santorum defeated traditional marriage by suggesting that homosexuality somehow led to bestiality. He blamed a church sex scandal in Massachusetts on liberals and wrote a book that seemed to imply mothers shouldn't work outside the house. Santorum says that was misinterpreted. Oh, really? When Terry Schiavo's right to die became a galvanizing issue here in 2004, Santorum was one of the first at her bedside. He was at the helm of the fight to outlaw so-called partial birth abortion, backs military strikes in Iran, campaigns against Islamofascists, and maintained There were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq long before even U.S. President George W. Bush stopped that charade. Casey lights no fire on the campaign trail and is clearly benefiting from He's Not Santorum Wave. From a He's Not Santorum Wave. But he is the son of a former governor and a state treasurer and well-known. The biggest cheers at a Democratic rally last weekend came not from anything Casey had to say, but when warm-up speakers rallied against Rick Santorum and counted the number of days to his retirement. Casey, 46, is known as a moderate Democrat because he is anti-abortion and opposes gun control. His father, in fact, was famous. His father, in fact, was famously barred from addressing the Democratic National Convention in 1992 because of his anti-abortion views. He is a lackluster campaigner. In endorsing him, the Philadelphia Inquirer used such words as even-tempered and polite exterior. And his victory would turn down the heat in Pennsylvania politics a number of degrees. Terry Madonna, a professor of public affairs in Pennsylvania's Franklin and Marshall College, says suburban Republicans in the moderate states are reacting to the activism of social conservatives. In a monthly analysis co-authored with pollster Michael Young, Madonna says the Casey Santorum battle is a metaphor for this national race. In 1994, Santorum was the upstart anti-establishment Republican who... railed against the Democratic establishment, against big government programs, and against excessive spending, he wrote. But now, in 2006, the X-Fire brand no longer challenges the prevailing Washington orthodoxy and is comfortable with the very political culture he once battled to win both his seats in the House and in the Senate. The symbol of Santorum's ultimate detachment from Pennsylvania voters, many believe, is the resistance in the upscale Virginia suburbs near Washington. And that was from Tim Harper of the Washington Bureau. I read this one from Toronto Star. I'm going to open this next set of tunes with Uriah Heep. This is from Demons and Wizards, their breakthrough LP. And, I'm going to open this with one that I think should have been a hit. It's called Poet's Justice. Man, that was a long read.